said I was going to grow my hair until the project was done.
I know, but you're going to get it done. It'll get done.
Sometimes
it's taking a long
be
time.
Down to my waist.
It's ridiculous. Such hard work. It'll make us old women pretty soon.
Very much so.
Oh, hello, hello, hello. Hi, and welcome to The Clatch at the Voice of Vashon 101.9. I'm Linda Nygaard, and I'll be here with you for the next hour, hosting with Susan McCabe. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
Hi. And we have a special guest co-host for, we hired her for witty remarks and sparkling conversation.
Desperate times call for desperate measures.
And her name is Cece Stone. Hi, Cece.
Hello, Linda. Hello, Susan.
Hello.
It's really good to see you. Thank
nice
you.
To have you.
Thank you for
Thank
coming.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah.
And the coffee is delightful.
Isn't it good? I know. I know. Okay, so, you know, we have a lot to talk about today. A lot. And I hope your jaws are all greased up and ready to talk. First of all, I just want to mention a couple of things. As we here in the studio know, this is Domestic Violence Prevention
Awareness Month.
Sorry, I knew I said the wrong word. It's Awareness Month. And we'll be talking about that in depth in a little while, but I just wanted to remind people to be sensitive to that fact. And there's a lot going on Vashon with regard to domestic violence awareness, and we'll talk about that later. You know, don't forget to download the Voice of Vashon app. It's so easy. And, you know, I think you owe it to yourself to listen to us at your leisure.
And how do I do that?
Well, you just go to wherever you buy your apps. And there's a free app. I don't know. I just typed in Voice of Vashon app and I got it. Don't ask me technical questions, Susan.
Go to thevoiceofvashon.org and look
okay,
for the app.
Okay, there you go. That's probably what I did.
I thought you were going to say Thriftway, aisle 7 or something.
There's a little green box.
You just take it up to the cashier and she loads it for you.
Yeah, and then she'll place it in your ear and then we'll know everything
you
we need to know.
Get the implant.
Yeah,
that's
get the implant.
True. No, that's we're sending out disinformation.
Anyway, also, with regard to Voice of Vashon, a little bit of business, we're having a fundraiser now, and it's an incredible lip sync battle. And I don't know if you've watched it yet, but you should go to the website and look at it. Susan, can you tell us about what that is exactly?
Yeah, there's some history that goes with
this. Yeah, and I don't know it.
This is the celebration of the birthday of Voice of Vashon 101.9 FM, and we actually got our FM license, and that was 7 years ago.
Okay.
And we started having these lip sync battles at what was at that time the Red Bike, and people would get in costumes, and it was a huge party, and everybody had a wonderful time, and they made donations voting for the folks who did their lip sync battles. Well, now it's online. And Danny Powers has videotaped, I think, five or six different lip sync videos. And they are hilarious and beautifully done.
And are these people I know, probably?
They may be people you know. Some of them are disguised.
Mm-hmm.
and for good reason, I might add.
Uh-oh, I'm going to be looking.
Yeah, right. But you just go to thevoiceofvashon.org and click on the lip sync battle and go from there. Watch them and vote. Every dollar that you put in is a vote for a particular candidate. And then
it's like the Vashon Mayor's Contest, kind of an idea.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. Vote for the sheep.
Voting in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you can vote for everybody.
That's
you can
true.
Vote. You don't have to.
And you can vote
one.
Over
you
and
can
over.
Pick them all.
Yeah.
Right.
And this Thursday night on the 14th, Stefan Moody is going to host a live stream of the, I think, top three winners who had to come up with a second song.
Oh, really?
And they will perform online again.
Boy, if there was ever motivation to fail,
that's
exactly.
it.
Wait a minute.
Let me tell you.
I might have to do more work.
I have to do this again?
That's right.
If I'm successful, I might have to do more?
It's the American way. You know, you do a good job, you get more to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, that's what it's going to be. And it's going gangbusters.
So if I'm out there in the world, where do I find this live stream?
Good question. I think it'll be on Voice of Vashon, but I'll check that.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no place else for it to go, is there?
Well, are we going to click on the website or are we going to go to the television channel?
Oh. Right. I hear you. And I'll get back to you with that.
Okay. Okay, perfect. Well, Cece, ordinarily what we do now is we talk about, we started this during COVID because we were missing our girlfriends and we thought maybe other girlfriends are missing girlfriends and let's just have coffee and talk. So since we started during COVID, we thought a COVID update would be a good thing to talk about. And today is, what is today, October 12th?
Yep.
Yeah, October 12th. 2021, in case you're listening sometime in 2024, don't be scared.
Or it could be worse.
Yeah, it could be worse. It could be worse.
Could be comforted.
But I've been really curious lately about religious exemptions and all of those things that are going on right now. And before we talk about that, I'd like to ask you guys about, do you know anybody that's not vaccinated?
Yes.
You do. And how are we handling that with regard to friends who are visiting, or what are we doing about that?
I have no intimate friends who are not vaccinated.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I have acquaintances who are not vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm frankly avoiding them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really a hard thing, you know. I'm wondering about the fairies, and
my understanding.
It's my understanding,
yep.
too.
It's a protest by the fairy workers.
It's my understanding Southwest Airlines has been impacted by this.
They canceled over 1,000 flights.
Yeah, I read this morning that 40% of Seattle cops may be headed for termination.
Because of that.
Mm-hmm. Because of refusal to accept vaccination?
Well, it's a sticky wicket for a lot of us. And, you know, United Airlines granted religious exemptions. And, you know, they have to provide reasonable accommodation. And what United Airlines decided reasonable accommodation was?
Stay at home.
Stay at home with no benefits and no pay.
Yeah.
They put them on indefinite leave.
Well.
And no benefits.
Aside from Christian Scientists, do you know any religion that outlaws, that forbids vaccination?
No, I don't.
I have to tell you, I have been a student of religion my whole life. As far as I know, all of the major religions have in common this one thing, that you're supposed to have concern for other people.
Right.
Ha-ha.
And I don't remember.
What a concept.
I mean, I'm not a biblical scholar, obviously. But I don't remember the Sermon on the Mount talking about vaccinations.
No.
I don't, you know, it's really a thorn in my side, I guess, is how you'd say it.
Well, to me, it's an IQ test. It's a very simple pass-fail IQ test.
Well, that's
could be considered
a good way
natural
to put it.
Selection as
yeah,
well. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a way to put it. The other thing that I'm concerned about is, you know, it's all... there are so many more mutations than we even know about it. I read an article in the New York Times yesterday. Statistically, to date, more than 237 million people have been infected with the virus. 4.8 million have died. 700,000 in the United States.
Wow.
And so with every new infection comes the opportunity for the virus to mutate again. And it's going to lead to more, because infections are all over the world, it's going to lead to more variants. And we just have to be really careful. And in the, what the scientist said, what's his name? What he said is, even for a virus, evolution is a long game. And our relationship with SARS-CoV-2 is still in its infancy. We are extremely unlikely to eradicate the virus. And over the next few years and decades, we'll find out what's happening. So
they talk about this thing becoming endemic.
Yes, right? Yes.
And endemic. Yeah. And I believe that there is pretty much consensus that that is, in fact, what is going to happen, that this will become a part of life.
A part of what we are, what we do, who we are.
Like,
so we're going to be walking around with masks for a long time.
Probably.
Well, you know, it's interesting. In Asia, once people realized the health benefits of masking,
in terms of colds and flu,
and other bronchial
and we brought that
air pollution. People wear masks all the time as a matter of course.
They do.
And I believe that, you know, I don't have a problem with this. To me, this is kind of like no shirt, no shoes,
no, no service.
Well, it is kind of. I mean, this is the, we've kind of evolved to a point of, hey, you know, maybe these masks are a really good thing for public health. I think there's a lot of evidence to support that position. Yeah. The part I find interesting is that we had such a stroke about, you know, burqas and face coverings for Islamic women. Well, and here we are.
And here we are.
And let me tell you, in the winter with a hat and a scarf and a face mask,
a lot like
it
a burqa.
Is pretty much full burqa.
And that's okay with me. That's fine with me. So there's been some talk, too, about people who actually... unvaccinated who got COVID. Okay, so now I'm immune. I have the antibodies, right?
No.
I'm saying that's what people are thinking.
Right. Yes.
People are thinking that it is not true. And in addition to becoming more transmissible, some variants have acquired the ability to dodge our antibodies. And the way they do that is they're engineered to latch onto specific molecules and on the surface. And then they snap into place like a puzzle piece. Mm-hmm. And if that mutation changes, it changes the whole thing. It changes the shape of those binding sites. So if you change that shape, this is Marion Pepper, an immunologist at UW. And she says, if you change that shape, you can make it impossible for an antibody to do its job. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening is the virus is changing its shape and the antibodies aren't working. I read one where that you have a maybe 30% immunity if you had COVID.
That's not really comforting.
No,
it's not. Here's the thing I think that's important to remember is that we are the test subjects. We are all learning as we're going.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what you have in science is now we're getting real life data.
Right.
And real life information coming in from all kinds of places. And they're now trying to push this together into some form that is valuable for research so that we know more than we did yesterday.
Yesterday. And we'll know more tomorrow.
And sometimes what we thought we knew isn't what we know now.
Well, so then that's where the... quote-unquote, the others get that we lied.
Mm-hmm.
It's because we lied.
Yeah.
Well, first he said this, and then he said that. Right. Well, you know, it's evolution. Right. It's science.
Well, it's intelligence.
Listen, you know, it's hey, we have new information. We thought you'd like to know it. You know what I mean? Like, we said it was going to be sunny this morning. Now there's a tornado headed
your
way. Do you want the update or not?
And you're a liar.
Yeah, you said it was going to be nice.
Yeah. Well, you know... there's one scientist, I love this quote, said, Shane Crotty, a virologist at the La Jolla Institute for Immunology, said, it's actually a library of guesses about what the immune system is doing. And I love that library of guesses because it's just millions of them.
That would describe medical science in general.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, you go to the doctor, they're guessing.
Well, or people who say, listen, I'm not going to have the vaccine because it's too soon. They don't know how I'm going to do this. But I'll take Regeneron. I'll take ivermectin.
And I'll drink some bleach.
How can you you make this one statement? I'm not going to do that.
And how
but
do you
I'm
feel
willing
about,
to do this.
How do you feel about polio and smallpox? Everybody thought, we've got a vaccine. We're going to do it. And now all of a sudden it's political.
Right.
People
and
were terrified.
Just plain stupid.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, what we actually need is we need a half an hour TV program every night where they take you through the ICU so you can see.
So you can see who's suffering and what's happening. Look at this.
Let's talk to some of these people's families. Let's talk, let's have a real conversation about what's going on, and let's not sugarcoat it. Because right now, if you don't get vaccinated, your chances of winding up in the hospital are much better than mine.
Right.
Yeah, and there was an article talking about how, you know, immunity and vaccinations and antibodies. Thank you. Antibiotics work. And they cited, do you know about the Australian rabbit situation where they introduced immunology. It's called myxoma virus, which Australian scientists released in 1950 an attempt to
kill the rabbits.
Kill the rabbits because they were overtaken by rabbits. And it proved to be fantastically virulent in the beginning. And after just a few years, it's milder and the strains of the virus are not as dominant anymore. But what they're saying now about the COVID virus is it's really not interested in killing us. It's really not. It's only interested in its own survival. Yeah.
It's only interested in replicating. Yeah.
You know, right. And I just thought that was an interesting way to look at it because those, you know, viruses have become almost like thinking beings.
I mean, it's kind of like,
we characterize them that way.
Yeah.
You know, let's face it. We are dealing with people who think, you know, wearing masks is child abuse.
Right.
So we're not having a rational conversation with some folks on this subject.
Well, and then that brings up the religious exemption as well. And I don't, you know, there's quite a process that people have to go through to get a religious exemption. You have to, there's a big form you have to fill out. Well, yeah, they shouldn't be liars. But, you know, Facebook's most viewed article in 2021 raised doubt about COVID vaccine. And so there's all of that at play as well. And the religious exemption has been pretty common now. But the employer still can reject it when he's if you apply for it, doesn't mean you're going to get it.
So employers who are mandated to have all their employees vaccinated don't necessarily have to allow for any exemptions.
Right.
Right.
Right. They can say you need to quit or whatever, you know. I did some research on Conway Regional Health System, which is a big health system talking about COVID. And they have a religious exemption attestation for COVID-19 vaccine. And it's pretty, they ask you if you take Tylenol and Pepto-Bismol and Albuterol and, you know, what kind of religion are you? What is your practice? So
where does it say in the sacred test?
Yes.
Thou shalt not vaccinate.
Right.
Or is it the Trump religion?
Well, I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of get that
feeling.
Yeah.
You know, I think that I'm going to make this generalization. I believe that there are people who for them now is not the right time ever. Mm-hmm. Ever. Mm-hmm. I'm married to that guy.
Are you?
I am married to that guy.
Yeah.
He wants advanced. He wants to know when. He wants to think about it. Mm, you want to say you want to, you know, I don't care what you say. If you want to do it now, the answer is going to be no.
Yeah.
And I think that this is part of human nature. It's not doesn't happen to be part of my makeup. But I believe this is a characteristic that is shared by many people. And I think that what we have is that these people have now become dug in.
Mm-hmm.
Where the answer is, I don't want it, and you can't
make
me. Yeah. And it's like having an argument with a toddler about wearing shoes.
Mm-hmm. Or putting a jacket on a snowstorm.
or why you can't wear shorts in December.
Right.
I mean, you know, without parental authority, without some kind of authority, you can't win that argument.
Right.
And so it has to be done by the authorities, if you will.
Somebody... And I believe that that's what happened with Biden and, you know, let's make, and through OSHA,
mm-hmm.
let's make businesses a safer place for people to work by mandating. And,
right.
and some of these leading companies like United Airways, who went ahead and said, that's it. Everybody's going to get vaccinated.
Yeah, period.
And I'm one of those people who thinks you should have to be vaccinated if you're going to fly.
I do too. I absolutely do.
Or go on a cruise.
Well,
I would like to, I'm one of those people who thinks we need to thank our underwriters. Can we take a break to
do that?
Yes,
we should do that. I would like to do that too.
All righty. We'll be right back.
Can't do what we do without our underwriters, like Vashon Market IGA and Vashon Plaza, one block west of the main highway, where you can find everything your family needs, from fresh produce to kids specials, legendary meats, wine, spirits, and movies. Open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
VOV programming support is provided by Island Escrow, Vashon's only independent escrow company providing comprehensive service for all types of real estate transactions since 1979. On the web at islandescrow.net.
Are we here? Are we back?
Yeah, we're back.
Thank you
to our underwriters. We couldn't be having this fascinating conversation with them. You're listening to The Clatch, by the way.
On Voice of Vashon. Okay, so we've been talking a little bit about COVID and the evolution of a virus. And so also along that scientific, I mean, there is the scientific end of COVID, and there's also the personal end of COVID. And how do we survive, and how do our friendships thrive, and human touch, and, you know, the way we used to just run up to each other and hug. What's going on with that now? Susan, you wanted to talk a little bit about how do we do that now?
Well, things, you know, we've gone from, okay, everything's open up to, we're gonna pull back a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I'm a big hugger, always have been.
Yeah, me too.
And sometimes I hug inappropriately.
Me too.
And I would like it if people tell me that. So now I want to know, what is the hugging protocol with COVID? Mm-hmm. What I find personally among my friends is if they're wearing a mask, I ask if I mm-hmm. may hug. Mm-hmm. If they're not wearing a mask, I ask if we're hugging. And most people are, but not everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I try to give them the option very comfortably mm-hmm. to say, no, get your hands off me.
Mm-hmm.
But what about you guys? What's your experience? What do you think?
Asking. I just had that experience yesterday. As a matter of fact, somebody said, can I give you a hug? And I was like, yeah. I went for a year and a half with no human touch, you know? So I'm really not afraid of it when it's people I know. And I know that the people have been, I mean, I'm not apt to hug a stranger anyway, but, you know, people that I hang out with on a normal basis are people who I know are wearing masks and vaccinated. So,
Cece?
People I know and trust, hug away.
Yeah.
If I don't know you that well, I don't even want to shake your hand.
I know.
I want to wave at you from a safe distance.
I get
it. And is that about COVID or is that just general social interaction?
I have to tell you, you know, I think that COVID was an eye-opener for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I think it exposed problems in bad marriages. You know,
oh, it did. I know.
You know, it happened actually to suit my husband to a T. He could not have been better designed than for this crisis. Because it was like, stay home, you mm-hmm. bet. Not see people, yes. Never go out to eat again.
Yes.
I love it.
Support for hermithood.
Yeah. Well, I learned that about myself, you know, because I've always been very busy and out and about and doing things and la, 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 la. And during COVID, it was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I can't stay here. And then, God, I really like it here. I really like this peace and quiet, and I'm not busy and I don't have to see people if I don't want to. So my introvert came out.
Well, yeah, and I'm telling you know how they say work expands to fill the time allotted to it? Well,
yes.
Now all of a sudden I had an infinite amount of time.
Right.
So that, you know, things I had never done before.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ooh, let's paint the inside of those closets.
Well, that wouldn't be something I would do.
Right, but you see? I mean, today, I finished a bed skirt that I started working on 7 years ago. The last time I had guests in that bedroom.
Oh, how
and
funny.
And I just taped it together, you know, like ready to make it look good. But like, today I finally got around to finishing that bed skirt.
Does this mean you're having company?
No, I'm doing what I call the death cleaning now.
Because
I'm getting ready to go to Amsterdam.
You know,
if I should die, and people have to come into my house, I don't want anyone to think I'm nuts.
We talked about that actually on the Clatch a couple months ago. We talked about death cleaning.
We did.
Anyway, we're getting off track here.
It's a very healthy thing.
So now, this is my insistence. We're going to have some tidbits that have nothing to do with anything.
Okay.
So, evolution, we're talking about the virus evolving. Let's talk about crocodiles evolving.
Okay, what do they evolve into?
Well, they're trying to adjust as life progresses and, you know, all of their...
They've been very successful for a very long time.
For a very long time, but climate change now is really speeding up that process. And, you know, they look like they belong to a different time, but, you know, there aren't very many varieties of crocodiles and alligators left anymore. And so they're still evolving. And the scientists have done a lot of, the archaeologists, a lot of experimenting, measuring skulls and, you know, nose length and teeth and all that kind of stuff. And what they're finding out is that they're kind of all melding. All the different breeds are sort of becoming alike because they have the same diet. They have the same prey. So their nose has to be shaped a certain way to get the whatever it is they're going after. And
dogs
I just
and small children.
Well, fish.
Unwary subway visitors.
But you know what I didn't know was that even after the age of dinosaurs, you know, when they got killed, alligators survived. There were alligators before the dinosaurs.
So they really are dinosaurs.
They really are.
They really are prehistoric.
They really are. And they call, now they're sort of lumping crocodiles and alligators into kind of a pile. I mean, they're all separate species, but they're calling them, the word for that is crocodilian. They're crocodilians.
Crocodilian. I have some people
love
like that,
that word.
How about octopode?
Octopode.
Is that an eight-legged person?
Plural for octopi. Octopuses.
Oh. Well, we talked about octopuses, and that is a proper word.
Yes, it is.
Which I didn't know either.
But octopode is also acceptable, it's my understanding. It was one of my new words.
So that's a plural.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
So one more little factoid here about these crocodiles.
They now have cell phones?
Well, of course. They had them before we did. but this is, let me see, I have to find
As opposed to alligatorial.
Paleontologist Stephanie Pierce and colleagues reported that some modern crocodilian lineages are evolving very rapidly. And the study by her and the co-authors adds to this picture. Crocodile species living through the land masses of the southern Pacific, like the famous saltwater crocodile, are showing a high rate of evolutionary change over the past 2 million years.
Like
that's
lightning.
Really fast.
Wow.
But they don't, you know, now they found out there are so many other species within that genre of animal that don't exist anymore. They're gone, and they have
so
really interesting names, and some of them are 40 feet long.
The names?
Of the crocodiles.
You're such a smart aleck.
Yes. They're Welsh.
Yeah, the names. They're Welsh names, Z's, and yeah. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
I just thought that was a good one.
I thought it was interesting.
That was a good one.
You know? And when they're talking about fast evolution. In two million years.
Now, you see, I think that's what's happening now with the human species.
It is.
And I think we've reached a sort of one of those branching points here where we have the anti-maskers and the no vaccine.
And they're going to evolve into something.
Right. And we're just not going to reproduce with those people.
No.
You know, the social differences will be too vast.
Perhaps the... Oh, I shouldn't say that.
What? Oh, don't.
You were going Neanderthal, weren't you?
I was going extinction.
Oh.
Well, yeah. Hey.
Well, Neanderthal's not a bad thing.
No, it's not.
But that's a whole other subject.
Yeah.
Okay, so there was a wheat and barley pregnancy test described in a recently translated medical text.
I can't wait to hear this.
I know. It comes
from... Did
you
read the article?
No.
Oh.
The trick comes from... a Pyrus Carlsberg collection at the University of Copenhagen.
Because, they have really long nights there.
They do, and they can study late. Yeah,
just
get in the dark and
Copenhagen,
study.
Copenhagen, I don't know, after dark, your choices are limited. So
I
can see where this kind of research would be appealing to you.
Well, they were discovered in the 1930s, these documents, but they've been sitting in storage ever since, and nobody's ever... really translated them, and four PhD students decided that they're going to translate this papyrus. It's 3,500 years old. And one of the things they found is that we've always believed that the Egyptians early on really didn't know too much about organs like the kidneys, but the papyrus show that they were indeed conscious of the organs and were the first people known to write about them in a medical text. So here's the thing they found that I found most interesting is the 3,500-year-old medical text includes a process for determining pregnancy and the sex of the baby. So to find out, the woman must first urinate into a bag of wheat and a bag of barley. And then the bag that sprouts first will tell the sex of the kid. And let's see, what is it? Barley for boys, wheat for girls. Though there's some kind of controversy over that as well, I'm sure. But
was it oats for hay, or was it how did it go?
Let's see. But then, okay, here. So Egyptologists had heard about this test from another papyrus held at the Egyptian Museum in Berlin. So they did some cross referencing, And they and then they did some testing. And they tested.
They peed into barley and wheat?
They did. They had men.
Those graduate students will do anything.
Well, no, they didn't pee in the wheat. They didn't pee in the wheat. They had people come and pee in the wheat.
They had pregnant women. They had men. That's right. They were looking for some scientific validity here.
They had pregnant women. They had non-pregnant women. And they had men.
Yep.
Oh.
And the only wheat or barley that sprouted was from the pregnant women. Not from the men and not from the non-pregnant women.
So there weren't any pregnant men, I guess.
There weren't any pregnant men, no. But they did find through their research it wasn't very reliable for predicting the sex.
But hey, you still have a 50-50 chance of being right.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, the odds don't get much better than that for most things.
Yeah. True. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, they're just kind of saying that, you know, they're onto something now. And it was and it's also... They traced this belief system through the centuries.
Well, I
think
that's
what's
interesting.
And they're finding it like in Ireland and Wales. Mm-hmm. And they have this thing about peeing on the barley.
The grain. Right. The legs on these things.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
really astonishing across vast distances, across huge amounts of time. And yet the central myth lives on, right?
Right.
So these PhD students, though, found that it wasn't a myth, right? They found that it was accurate.
Well, they were actually doing it. This was what they were writing about back then.
Right.
And then they did some research and found out that it kind of worked.
It doesn't work for the sex.
Pregnancy.
Oh, it just indicates pregnancy.
Yeah. Pregnant women can sprout wheat.
those tests from the dollar store are pretty good.
Oh, you know that from firsthand experience. So I thought that was interesting, and it's kind of, you know, that it's been spoken as an old wives' tale.
It is
an old wives' tale, but it's partially true.
Hey.
You know?
Chewing willow bark.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean,
there are plenty of old wives' mm-hmm. tales that are true.
That work.
Yeah.
That are true. Yeah.
Wait, what is chewing willow
bark? That's aspirin.
Oh, really?
Yeah, aspirin.
I didn't know that.
Something, yeah. Yep.
I didn't know that.
You forget about your headache while you're trying to get the willow bark off
your teeth.
Off your teeth.
Tea,
huh? Off your teeth.
Yeah. So,
But I actually think, you know, if you're wandering around out in the woods, right, and you don't know what anything is and you're eating things, then you go, well, after a while, you go, geez, I feel better. And it was that.
It was that stuff. Yeah.
Must have been.
One more little tiny tidbit that probably doesn't require a lot of conversation, but I loved this idea that in Norway, way up high in Norway where ancient people lived in the snow, and they have found a 1,300-year-old ski buried in the snow. And they had found the mate to it several years ago, but because of climate change and warming, mm-hmm. now they're able to see the paths that those ancient people tread mm-hmm. on their skis in Norway.
Wow.
And now they have a pair. They're actually a pair. So they're trying to, you know, find more things and see if this person was a traveler or a hunter or who this person was. But they think because of the size of the skis that it was a pretty sizable individual.
Norwegians are not all that big. Swedes are big.
Oh, Norwegians are big.
Are they big?
Yeah.
Okay. My family on my mother's side is Norwegian.
And they're little?
Teeny weeny. But
oh, maybe there's little ones too.
Yeah, I think there was. Somehow I got tall.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, you did get tall. Yeah. And then where are we? What are we talking about here?
Well, I liked your little funny. I hope you'll tell that one.
This is an aside totally, but you know, I read a lot and I find a lot of weird stuff and a lot of stuff I don't want to talk about, but this one this is a funny one. It was a classified ad and it says cemetery superintendent looking for cemetery superintendent. The ideal candidate must be able to supervise in a fast-paced environment.
I suppose that's true with COVID. Well, it could be a lot quicker.
Oh God, then it's not funny. Oh my God, that's not funny. So that brings us to our main topic of the day.
Can we, before we go there, can we talk a little bit about international travel? With Cece, who is an international traveler?
Sure.
Because like, you,
Go ahead.
UCC have property in Amsterdam.
I have houseboats.
Houseboats in Amsterdam.
Yep.
So what are the, can I say you're going to be traveling back there
yep.
soon? What are the COVID protocols that have been demanded of you on the way and when you get there?
Have to have proof of vaccination. Have to have a negative COVID test before flying. So flying
okay.
is the part that is requiring.
Yeah. Oh, so once you get there.
The Netherlands, no, once we're there, we walk off the plane. They
you
stamp
don't
our
do you have to have things. Proof there?
No, it's the same proof that we use to get on the plane
is okay.
We'll get
so
us out
again.
Okay,
well, that's
so
good.
If you got on a plane, they figure you're okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah. So I've been wondering, you've lived in Amsterdam and you've done a lot of traveling in Europe. How is life different between that and this in general?
I'll tell you my biggest takeaway. Well, what I tell people is that life is better for regular people, ordinary mm-hmm. people, middle class people, poor people. Life is more expensive for rich people.
Oh,
the necessities are affordable.
Mm-hmm.
You have good public transportation. You have good schools,
libraries,
you have health insurance. You have libraries. You have much better infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
much better services.
Mm.
But if you, the more money you make, the more expensive it becomes.
Mm-hmm.
So you pay more for luxuries and you pay less for necessities.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's interesting.
All right.
That
so
makes
that
sense.
Life is more enjoyable and less fraught with pressure and anxiety and this feeling that, all right, now, and I'll give you another example. When you get to have a job in the Netherlands or in Europe, you're offered an employment contract,
mm-hmm.
and it is for a set number of hours for a set amount of time. And if that's your first year, and if they offer you a second year contract, it's for a longer period of time.
Really?
Oh,
so that you have some set, you know what's coming.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if your company goes out of business before your year contract is up, your company has been required by the government to buy an insurance policy that will pay your salary till the end of your contract.
And is that true Europe-wide, or is that just the Netherlands?
I do not know. I cannot speak to all of Europe. I suspect it is true throughout the European Union.
Yeah, it is, I think, yeah.
But the result of this is that you have some dependable structure around you.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to fall off the deep end and when you
and go have to live under a bridge.
Homeless,
and
yeah.
There are no homeless people.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the Netherlands. They find you a place to live, and then they assign you a social worker who is going to then diagnose why you are not, you know, why you're having trouble. They did an interesting thing about crime. They did a survey of all of the crimes that were committed in the Netherlands, and they discovered that the vast majority of these crimes were committed by 300 people.
Oh my goodness, I was just going to ask you about crime.
300 people in the country.
In the Netherlands?
In the
total?
Country. Were responsible for most of the bad stuff going on.
Isn't
so what they did was they just assigned cops to follow these 300 people around. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
And I bet they caught them.
There was, what can you do?
Yeah.
I mean, it really put a dent in you know, these kinds of problems. They don't throw you in prison. They throw you into like social reform
or treatment
school
or something.
Yeah,
like that.
They try to fix the problem so that you're not going to be a burden on society. For it's not about punishing. It's about
helping.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like they have a pretty strong social contract in their government.
Well,
it's just
there's a. I'll tell you another difference in this little town that my friends live in. I think there are about 24,000 people that live in this little town.
Mm-hmm.
And on the town council in this little town, there are almost 50 people who show up at the town council meetings. Wow. 50 people. And they're from all these different neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And everybody gets elected and everybody takes a turn. So that what you also have is people who actually have some experience mm-hmm. in running a government. Because the Netherlands is all underwater. If they don't work together to right. keep the water out, they're all going to drown.
They're going to die.
They have a yeah. common interest.
Yeah,
I think it's called democracy.
Well, it's not democracy like it is here in America. It's not the Wild West of freedom mm-hmm. land where, hey, if there's not a rule against it, you can do it. They arrest you for having a toy gun in the Netherlands.
Good. Wow.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So it feels like there's a safety net.
There's a sense of safety.
There, mm-hmm. you're not going to mm-hmm. fall off the cliff, and you're not necessarily going to get shot.
So, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask if there is is there poverty? Is there?
Sure, but it's not this grinding generational poverty mm-hmm. that you see here in this country.
It's not. And so somehow the government steps in and helps.
What the government does is I won't say it's a basic income, mm-hmm. but they find you a place to live. They make sure you have enough food to eat. They want your kids in school. They want to mm-hmm. make sure, you know what I mean? The government is going to nip at your heels to get you to participate in a socially responsible way in life in the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. They don't just let you come and sit in your house and watch, you know, video games.
Yeah.
They knock on your door and they want to explain to yeah. you why this is bad.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, it's much more socially structured. But what I see are happier people and happier kids. And the difference between children in stores and between the Dutch children and American children, oh my God.
They're well behaved, in other words.
They're happy.
Yeah.
You know, if they have a screaming fit, it's for a few minutes. The parents comfort them, and then on they go. It's not mm-hmm. like, oh, the world has ended, and now, my God, you know.
So I have a question. Is it more of a homogeneous population?
It is more international. There's in the Netherlands, it's a net exporter of people. More Dutch people leave the Netherlands every year to go live in other countries. Quite often, it used to be the United States. They were big on dairy farming, as you might imagine.
Yeah, sure.
Because there's no land in the Netherlands, right? You can't split up the family farm, you know, too many ways, because that already happened 500 years ago.
Right.
You know, everything's chopped up into the littlest possible pieces. So if you want to do these things, you know, they quite often would go to Australia, sheep, you know, any place where there's farming. The Dutch are world leaders. The Dutch are the largest exporter of food in Europe.
That's fascinating to
me. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
The Dutch?
They grow it under glass. Yeah. The Dutch.
I had no idea. Now I have to do some more research.
Innovative.
How fun.
Yeah.
How fun.
Yeah. The Dutch are like, as Switzerland is to money, the Netherlands is to food.
Oh,
that's interesting.
Okay, there's your national defense strategy. Do you want to eat? Then you better leave us alone.
You better be nice to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have a comment. As advertisers are to commercial radio, underwriters are to Voice of Vashon.
Oh, what a nice segue.
Let's hear from them.
Thank you.
VOV programming support is provided by Pandora's Box, Vashon Island's provider of quality pet foods at competitive prices. With over 100 years of combined knowledge and experience in pet care and pet nutrition, you'll find Pandora's Box on Vashon Highway, north of the main intersection.
This portion of VOV programming is brought to you by Minglement, Vashon Island's natural marketplace for the conscious consumer, where owners, staff, and customers alike embrace the importance of natural, organic, and non-GMO food and products, along with supplements, tinctures, gifts, bulk teas, spices, and herbs.
What?
Find them at Center, where the town of Vashon originated.
Thank you to our underwriters. We are so happy to have you and grateful to all the underwriters who keep Voice of Vashon going. This is The Clatch.
Mwah!
Linda Nygaard, Cece Stone, and myself, I'm Susan McCabe, are here talking about whatever comes to mind.
Yeah, whatever comes to mind. I was, what about, you know, domestic violence?
What about
Awareness Week, month?
Month.
Is there a domestic violence problem.
I think there's a domestic violence problem in everywhere. Country of the world.
Yeah. Do they have safety nets for women and that kind of thing over there? Do you know?
They do. But what they have, I think, that makes a significant difference is that they have significant public education about sex.
Oh, that! Wow.
And it starts early.
Uh-huh.
And it is done to make kids responsible.
Wow. That's a novel thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the Netherlands actually has a very low incidence of rape.
Mm.
And I think one of the reasons is because they have a much more egalitarian system.
Mm-hmm.
And there is... they're much more used to seeing women in positions of power and women as equals in school.
So if they are much more aware of how strong and wonderful women are, do they have women's marches and demonstrations in your experience? Have you seen that?
Well, we have, there's gay pride.
Oh, good. Good. Excellent.
The biggest gay pride
celebrations
in Europe. And one of the first places. It was one of the first places that gay marriage was legal. It was back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
So the Dutch are very progressive about a lot of things. And they're very traditional about other things. But for the most part, I find them to be good-natured, reasonable people who enjoy life and are not looking, you know, in America, it's kind of like you're nobody if you're not rich, right?
Yeah.
Every kid in school wants to be a famous baseball player, a famous basketball player, a famous rock star, somebody famous and rich.
And rich. Yeah.
Nobody says, oh, geez, I think I'd like to be a plumber.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And let me tell you, if you wanted to be a plumber on Vashon, oh my God, you'd be
you'd be rich
a
right now.
Local,
possibly even
you'd
famous.
You'd be beloved
if
by
you
the
would
community.
Show up. Yes. Yeah, if you just show up. Yeah, that's really interesting about domestic violence and women and the whole societal construct that they have.
If you can't put the blame for this problem where it belongs, which is not on women,
no. Right.
You know, they're talking about so many women were raped. Like, this happened in some sort of abstract
way.
How
about so many men raped so many women?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's right. 100% of rapes.
It's right.
Are caused by men.
Yeah.
Men on men, men on women, men on kids. I mean, that's pretty much the story.
Mm-hmm.
White male supremacy. And it permeates everything that we do in this country, that and capitalism, because you are how much you make. You are how much you're worth. Otherwise, you're not worth anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's this drive to amass this gigantic pile of money so that's where you get your status.
Mm-hmm.
Not from being a good person, not from being a contributing member to your community. You get it from amassing that big pile and then waving it around in front of people's faces.
Well, and I think that puts a lot of pressure on men and some women. It puts a lot of pressure on individuals, which then can manifest itself in violence.
In violence,
because it's low self-esteem. I'm not as good.
I'm not
as
worthy.
My, yes, right. And so I'm going to beat you up.
Mm-hmm. Or I'm going
to
use my money to beat you up. I'm going to use my big loud voice to beat you up. I'm going to intimidate you with my truck. I'm going to, as we said before, it's this power over this domination that is the compelling driver for this phenomenon. I think.
Well, it brings up another thought that, you know, you're talking about, I'll intimidate you with my pickup or with my money or with, you know, domestic violence is not, I'm going to beat you up necessarily, you know?
Well, did you guys hear the story about the woman who was walking home in London and she went missing? She was found to have been raped and killed by a cop.
No.
Did you
follow
this story?
Is this new?
At all? It happened a few months ago.
Okay, no.
This was a guy who was, I think, a cop who was in his 50s. He'd been a cop for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I just read the other day that his coworkers called him the rapist.
Oh, my God.
They called him the rapist because one of the things he liked to do was show them pornographic videos featuring
extreme violence against women. Hey, look at this.
To
this
his co-workers? Really,
to his co-workers. Now,
that's creepy.
Here's what you have. This is his cops. He's telling, right? So what you have is this code, this acceptance among men that, hey, boys will be boys, or this is
locker
okay,
room
or
talk.
This is just right. This is just the way, this is how it is. And women somehow have to adjust their lives. Women have to walk in packs. Women have to can't wear certain clothes. Women can't behave a certain way because they bring it on themselves.
Yeah, women are held responsible for men's sexual behavior.
Right, and you know, so somebody said, this isn't homicide, this is femicide. You know, this is violence specifically directed at people who can't fight back.
And I do think awareness is on the rise. I mean, I do, I'm not saying it's, it's getting better.
Mm-hmm.
People are talking about it. It's not anymore some kind of scourge that you have to carry around with you.
When we were kids, if boys whistled at you, what did you do?
You either smiled back or you ignored it.
Right.
I never ignored it. I wasn't taught to ignore it. It was a compliment.
Yeah. It was a compliment.
Yeah.
All right. If they, all right. So the whistling's okay. How about yelling things? Hey, pretty.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So where's your line? Where is that line is moving all the time through society.
True.
Well, you know, it's a sticky wicket too when you say, don't you look pretty today? If a man says that to a woman. And it happened to me the other day. I had a outfit on that I liked, and a man that I know said, oh, you look so good today. And I said, well, thank you. And he said, oh, God, I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to say that anymore. And it's like, well, how do you, is it really bad to tell me that I look nice?
Well, it seems to me if it's someone that you know.
And that I like.
Who also knows that you like to look good. And that you go to some trouble to look good. Then he's complimenting you on the effort that you've made.
I think it comes back to the hugging thing again. It's kind of like, look, part of being conscious of other people. I used to wear perfume.
I used to wear it too.
I volunteered in the library and I worked with a woman who was hypersensitive to smells. And she said to me one day, she goes, you know, this is really, you're giving me a headache. I had never occurred to me.
Right.
Since that day, I have not worn perfume because, you know, it's not my intention to move through life and make other people feel
miserable.
Bad inadvertently. You know, it's hard enough to, you know, to avoid the minefields that you see.
Anyway.
And I think that it's just this idea that, hey, it's always good to ask first. How do you know, is it okay? Do you, you know, how do you feel about that? Because
so, yeah, but a man can't ask you, is it okay if I tell you you look nice?
Because I've already told you.
You know, or I don't think it's wrong to say you look really happy. And that's not appearance oriented. Or, geez, you look very, you know, you look so.
Oh, that's true. A different word instead of
you
nice.
Look fresh,
or
you look healthy.
Have,
you look
right,
rested.
Because words do matter.
Well, the little girls, that's a whole other thing about bringing up little girls. You know, I have a granddaughter who's now 20. And when she was a baby, little girl running around, how cute, how cute, how cute, how cute. And that's kind of what happens with little girls still.
Aren't you a pretty little girl?
A pretty little girl. And, you know, so then we sort of went, oh, you're so smart.
Yeah.
And then you start using different words.
Right.
And boys are punching away and we're going, oh, boys will be boys.
Yeah. I never allowed guns in my house when my boys were little. No toy guns, no Western stuff, you know. Well, they used shoes for guns, you know. I mean,
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
You always have this. You can't take away my fingers.
My finger gun. Yeah.
Yeah, that is fascinating. And I raised a couple boys as well.
Right.
And they made guns out of whatever they had around.
Sticks, that's right.
They made swords. Mm-hmm. They had battles. There was the battling.
Oh, always the battling.
Hand-to-hand combat. Mm-hmm.
Mine did a lot of ninja stuff.
Yes.
And, you know, they made fake knuckles and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
So is that a biological, energetic kind of thing? Is it, I mean.
I don't know.
The epitome of maleness in a positive way is protection.
Oh, yes.
And so are they hardwired to have the ability to protect?
I think they must
And I think that can be perverted in situations of domestic violence where
it becomes
there's a fine line between protection and control.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'm one of the things I think they shouldn't do, I don't think they should let young men have guns.
Period.
Young men with guns is pretty much a recipe for, you know, something bad's going to happen.
You don't young, what do you
mean? I'm talking like under 25, you know?
Yeah.
Young men with guns.
Mm-hmm.
Young men with a lot of testosterone, no life experience, and who knows what kind
of
social
skills. And they're mad at somebody.
My crummy little apartment was broken into once, and they stole my 9-inch black and white TV. Whoever broke and took my 9-inch black and white TV, all right? With the antenna that was 8 feet tall.
Yeah.
They stole my TV.
Oh.
And if I had a gun and gotten home and this caught whoever this was walking out the door with my TV, I would have shot them over a 9-inch black and white TV. That's how crazed I would have been. This is not exactly good judgment. You know what I mean?
It's not a condition under which you want people to have weapons of total destruction.
Right. That's how easy. I was in my early 20s, and I would have killed somebody over this minor transgression, really.
Well, when we talk about young men with guns, that is why old men in politics send young men with guns to war.
Because it's like,
they can't go. They don't want to go.
No, they're too smart.
It's too much money.
Yeah, they've got too much to lose.
Yeah.
And young men don't realize that.
Well, you know, that guy, that 20-year-old from Arkansas lives in the woods. He's dispensable.
Yeah, that's the other. Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole thing.
Hey, listen, they were selecting.
I know they were.
You know, during Vietnam, they were looking for people who were dumb enough to do these things.
They
were literally selecting
for
stupid.
I remember well.
Was that where the lottery numbers came from?
It was how they were signing. It was who they were letting in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see.
They were letting in people who could not pass the most.
There were student exemptions and things like that.
The most basic tests. Yeah, there were all kinds of. They were taking everybody.
Yeah. Cannon fodder. We have 3 minutes left.
We do? That's not very much time.
No. What burning questions do we have?
Well, my question, I have a big question.
What's that?
And my big question is, on the domestic violence issue, you know, on the different levels of violence, mental violence and physical violence, emotional, that kind of thing, it can sometimes be almost invisible. Mm-hmm. When you are outside of the situation, let's say it's a couple you know from Phoenix and you go visit them and you can see it, but you can't quite touch it and it's not self-evident immediately. How does one help a person when you see that person under the thumb, you know what's going on? And I don't know how we can help. I know on the island we call Dove.
Well, and Dove this month is offering training for community advocacy, I think they call it. But fortunately, they were on Real Talk today. A couple of instructors, Nin Gray and Rashawn Rangley, were on Real Talk with me today. And they talked about that very thing. And it's not about jump in and try to help.
To help, right.
It's really about listen to the person you think might be a victim.
Mm-hmm.
Allow them to talk when they're ready to talk and allow them to steer the course of what they're going to do next.
Yeah.
If you try and jump in to help, you might exaggerate the isolation that they're already experiencing.
Or you could make things worse or you could make yourself a target.
Yeah, that too.
You know, when I was very young, I had little babies in my car and I was in the grocery store. I was probably in my early 30s, and there was a pickup in the parking lot, and there was a man in the pickup beating on the woman in the pickup. And I had two little boys in the back seat. I had a house or groceries in my car, and I looked at her, and I saw her face, and I saw his anger, and I could not help myself. I had to go, and I did, and it was pretty awful. He came after me.
Yeah.
You know, and I got away and it was fine. But anyway, gosh, we're out of time.
We are out of time.
It's been a pleasure. Cece, thank you so
much. You're welcome.
You're a most interesting, you know, is it Cece who said the busiest mouths on Vashon?
I think she did.
Yeah.
Yes,
well, she's a busy mouth too. And that's good.
Takes one to know one.
Thank you all for listening. It's been really a pleasure. And we'll be back in a couple weeks. All right. So that was a great job. Thank you.
You're welcome.